So this paper is indebted to my MS students. I was inspired by the response to the novel, the observations. So I just want to make it clear that I owe my fascination with this text to the response to it. And it's funded as well by a research project on the topic, on the notion of orientation. Jane Harris' Observations, 2007, narrates the story of Bessie Buckley, a 15-year-old Irish girl who searches for work and finds it in Castle Havers, near Glasgow, employed by Arabella Wright, the mistress of the state, in 1863. Reviews of the novel find Harris' text, and I quote, firmly anchored in the 19th century with many characteristics of the classic Victorian novel, mystery, the hint of the ghost story, a rich cast of characters, and a strong element of redemption, unquote. In this paper, we'll focus on the character of Bessie, a maid who finds redemption and improvement through friendship, bonding, and care, and who pens her own story, thus becoming a writer. Arguably, the act of writing is then coupled with ethics of care, which underlines issues of vulnerability and resilience in a Victorian context, but through a contemporary lens. Bessie represents the other of Victorian fiction, the prostitute, who, fleeing from her mother, also her pimp, finds solace and a home to Castle Havers, developing a strong attachment to Arabella, her mistress. But she does not treat Bessie as in a conventional way, because Bessie, the maid of all work, is asked to act in a weird way doing this. I'm not going to read the whole quotation, but you can see the repetition of the instructions that Arabella kept saying. Do you trust me, Bessie? Yes, ma'am. Then close your eyes. And then in the very flat voice, she keeps saying, stand and seed, stand and seed, stand and seed. In the very last paragraph, what she was up to, having an inkling, she just kept on in the flat voice, stand, seat, and then she blinked and said out loud, well done, Bessie, you made light the fire. This experiment is one of the many experiments many others Arabella conducts to train Bessie as a servant, as she did with the former servant, Nora, who died in mysterious circumstances and with whom she becomes obsessed in the course of the novel. Then Bessie is a subject observed, and the title Observations, by Arabella's scientific gaze, as she's writing the book. In the character is writing a book, The Observations, on the servant type, and I quote, scientifically to be studied, measured, and categorized into separate subdivisions through the tools of phrenology and ethnography, following on Hellman and Mark Lowing. While learning how to become a maid of all work, Bessie is asked also to keep a record of her daily activities and thus providing the raw material for Arabella's treatise on the servant type. Bessie, piqued by her curiosity, discovers Arabella's observations, her record of the maid's progression at home, an experiment she conducts for her to find out the distinctive features of the perfect maid. It has been noted that this is similar, for example, to Henry Mayhew's observations on the types on the London streets. But also it reminds us of the real-life Arthur Mumby and his relationship with his maid of all work and a lover and later wife, Hannah Colwick, as he commissioned her to write down her observations of her daily life and urged her to dress up as a lady. However, Arabella uses this manipulative power over her servants to arguably experiment with the subject positions of scientist, teacher, mother, and child. And I'm following, again, Hellman and Lowing. Bessie feels betrayed, and in the novel she confesses, I was no more than a thing to Arabella, a thing that might be experimented upon, toyed with, and cast aside at a whim when it had outgrown its use, unquote. For me, it's interesting that we have this quotation about her being a thing, because for me it's quite similar to the definition of a thing that Bill Brown gives today of thing in thing theory. We have the materiality, the material nature of here of the body as well, including as a character acknowledging her being of use in, by other characters in the novel. Accordingly, as she feels betrayed, she sets out to wreak havoc and carry out her revenge against her mistress by making her believe that the house is haunted, ghostwritten by Nora, the former servant. And this will precipitate Arabella's mental deterioration, even when Bessie confesses that this is all a concocted plan. Arabella imagines that Nora is alive, was being brought back to life just to haunt her. And we've got this quotation you have on the screen. "She was scared of ghosts, I realized. And in that moment, the idea formed in my mind, a way to get my own back. It was only a childish prank. How could I ever have foretold the terrible consequences of what I was about to do?" Then Arabella will deteriorate progressively until she breaks down. And interestingly, when she breaks down, Arabella's husband and the family doctor use the same scientific method that she attempted to use with her servants in attempting to restore her mental health, obsessively examining Arabella for external physical markers of insanity and writing her up as a case study to further his career following Hellman and Alloying. Crucially, when Arabella asks Bessie to keep a record of her daily work as a maid, also her feelings, Bessie becomes a writer, providing a confessional narrative in the course of the novel, but also providing key information about her past life as a wounded first-person narrator. As some critics have suggested, she becomes a writer in her own right, with the effect of undermining the imperative of obedience Arabella otherwise seeks to inculcate, so challenging the domination that Arabella attempted to impose upon her. In her narration dealing with her past life as a prostitute, the reader witnesses a tragic story of child abuse and maternal sexual exploitation since Bridget, her mother, became her pimp and introduced her in the family business at a tender age. Bessie could not rely on anybody else for help, unlike Arabella, who, when she falls into madness, she holds on on Bessie's help. Then we learn, when we read Bessie's account, we learn that child Bessie clings to her mother when she threatens to leave her behind in planning to go away across the water with her lover, taking advantage of a vulnerable 9-year-old Bessie who craves for love and is emotionally deprived, as you have it here on the screen. When the mother says that the passage costs a flipping fortune, Joe says you can't afford to take you, I'm sorry to say that at this point I began to cry. At this prospect, I fell wailing at her feet. She let me weep many hot and bitter tears into her lap while she stroked my hair and told me to shh. "Don't leave me, Mammy," I sobbed. "Please don't go away." Bridget sexually exploits her daughter, Bessie, who finally finds a way out by sharing her life with Mr. Levy, a rich old man who provides her with some stability, and then she moves away, and when she finds Castle Havers later in the novel. Bridget will make a last appearance in the novel when she goes to Castle Havers to reclaim her daughter as a source of income. This reappearance, I won't say more about this reappearance so that I won't spoil the whole novel. This reappearance will bring Bessie's painful memories back to life. And in this, Harry's novel clearly mobilizes the vulnerability of a wounded self whose past injuries have left a trace that erupts and are reenacted in Bessie's relationship with Arabella. A relationship that is based upon control and dominance first, but then upon need and care. The concept of vulnerability is connected with the ethical trend that took place in the 1980s and 1990s, following the lead of trauma critics. Emmanuel Levinas' Trace of the Author comes to mind, that plays a fundamental role as it significantly underlines the ethical encounter with the other, whose trace marks the proximity of the human contact. Levinas' Trace was expounded and developed into his works, Totality and Infinity, and Otherwise Than Being, or Beyond Essence, but it has been argued that the subject matter of the other's face runs through all his work. Levinas improves his theories about the face through the concepts of proximity and remoteness from a phenomenological perspective, and ends up suggesting that, and I quote, "the trace of the other marks and even constitutes the other's face," unquote. that it keeps the ambiguous character of an enigma, a borderline phenomenon located between the visible and the invisible, the said and the unsaying. It is for this reason that to Levin as a trace, understood phenomenologically, is a mark of some paradoxical sort of material proximity of a human contact. To me, The Observations, as a neo-Victorian novel, reorients itself towards the Victorian past. It's very much rooted in Victorian themes, but also is indebted to contemporary issues, pressing issues such as vulnerability and resilience. Thus, Bess's vulnerability has turned into resilience through friendship and bonding with Arabella, where she develops an ethics of care in her face-to-face encounter with Arabella. Following Jean-Michel Gantot, and as I have developed elsewhere, Carol Gilligan's In a Different Voice developed this notion of an ethics of care and based her research on Nancy Chodorov's self-in-relationship concept. Particularly apt in this novel where we've got a mother-daughter relationship and woman-to-woman relationship as well, female friendship here. As Gilligan argued, and I quote, the psychology of women that has consistently been described as distinctive in its great orientation toward relationships and interdependence implies a more contextual mode of judgment and a different moral understanding, unquote. According to one critic, what Gilligan's ethics of care has succeeded in articulating is women's moral self-representation. What Will Gilligan is discussing are the beliefs, self-representations, and self-interpretations that many women bring to their moral dilemmas. Gilligan's ethics of care has developed into more general application of this notion. Alongside Gilligan's approach to care, Gantot conceptualizes vulnerability through Levinas' take on vulnerability as passivity, eliciting a response based on responsibility for the other. The other's vulnerability has an impact upon the subject, who has to act as recipient or as host to the other, welcoming the other into exposure. As Gantot poses, in this case, vulnerability takes on a positive note because vulnerability and attending to the other, and I quote, become conditions of acting towards the good life and the mainstream of ethical consideration, unquote. In the novel, Bessie welcomes the other in total exposure and attends to her, Arabella. At one point, I lay down next to her on the coverlet and cradled her in my arms. I meant not this respect, right? I only wanted to comfort her. And then later in this quotation, she wonders what if she had had the love of her mother. I couldn't help getting long-legged about the way I was brought up. If only this and if only that. If only my mother had not been what she was. As I lay there next to Mrs., I was reminded of the old days when Bridget and me used to pick together in the same bed in Dublin. Obviously, this brings up her past injuries, psychological injuries. So in caring for the other, also vulnerable, Bessie changes her mood and is able to step outside herself, thus acknowledging for her vulnerable condition. And in so doing, she also realizes that in the face of unspeakable suffering, she has found resilience, which means to find strength in adversity and the ability to resist disorder and disruption. For example, a distorted mother-daughter relationship punctuated by poverty and shameful behavior. To find strength, to be resilient has been defined from a psychological point of view as an individual's ability to adapt and develop a meaningful life despite adversities, trauma, or social disadvantage. In this line, one critic is Boris Cyrulnik, who published Resilience, How Your Inner Strength Can Set You Free from the Past, first published in French and then translated into English, which has signified a landmark in psychology, in particularly the treatment of child survivors of different types of trauma. In Cyrulnik's terms, the concept of resilience refers to the mechanism that allows us to bounce back when fate knocks us down. Although his main focus has been children of survivors, his resilience theory can be applied to anyone experiencing excruciating physical and or psychological wound. And I quote, at the traumatic moment, of course, we perceive only the wound. It is not until much later that we can speak of resilience, not until the restored adult can at least come to terms with the chaos of a childhood, unquote. In order for a traumatized survivor to work through his trauma and to integrate himself, herself in the community. The most effective way, according to this critic, is, and I quote, you have on screen, to transform the trauma. As soon as we can talk about the trauma, draw it, put it on a stage, or think it through, we can control the emotions that either overwhelmed us or made us freeze when it occurred. Representing the tragedy allows us to rework the feelings it triggers. So obviously, for me, evoking the power of art in redoing or in coming to terms with this trauma. This is precisely what Bessie achieves in the novel, to transform her trauma, to write, to shape, and to build up herself through the ethics of care and through the process of writing. Not only did she record her daily activities as a maid, as she was instructed, but also she records her feelings as becoming a writer. So this reminds me of Isabel's paper on how Nelly's text becomes confessional in a way when she records her feelings as well. Bessie puts her wounded self together in telling the story of Arabella's The Observations, which also becomes a book, The Observations, the novel. And she says here in the novel that it's very well received by those who have been able to read it. The art of writing is then coupled with ethics of care, which underlines issues of vulnerability and resilience in the Victorian context, but also relevant to the contemporary readership. In fact, the end of the novel is focused on the reader, on the potential reader, on readership. At the end of the novel, Isabella is confined to an asylum, and Bessie manages to work there as a kitchen maid first, and then as an attendant at this asylum, the Glasgow Asylum, just to be close to her mistress. When she's there, she's asked by Dr. Lawrence, and I quote from the asylum, to write this history of Mrs. and how we met and all that, for he thought it would be interesting, a useful document for him and his colleagues to read, since they are still intrigued by her case, unquote. Which is in fact the plot of The Observations. So might wonder whether she's just complying with the masculine requirement, the masculine field of science, in that writing the story for them, but she turns that inside and upside down when what she does is something quite different in the novel. In recounting the story of Arabella in the first person, Bessie engages the reader in what is called a logic of recognition, following Rita Felski, as we are called on, in other words, to do justice to how readers respond to the words they encounter. Whom for, I think Isabel was saying in her paper, whom am I writing for? That Bessie's concerned with the reader's response, not necessarily belonging to the scientific field, is made clear when she affirms that The Observations has been appreciated by many readers. This communal experience of reading the same text helps achieving an awareness of forming part of a broader community, which contributes to her sense of integration in the community. So in addition, this emphasis on intersubjective recognition between Bessie and Arabella, Bessie and the potential reader, of perceived commonality and shared history calls for a more embodied experience when reading. This means, and I quote, we are fundamentally social creatures whose survival and well-being depend on our interactions with particular embodied others. We are embodied and embedded beings who use and are used by words, and this resonates with Lucy's paper in the previous panel. Finally, Bessie's first-person narration and her caring relationship with Arabella reminds us that we depend on one another, that our feelings and perspectival approaches play a part when we face embodied others, and that they can so that we can challenge objectifying gaze through this. In this sense, this new Victorian novel reorients itself towards the Victorian past, but also illustrates a turn to the material embodiment of the author-reader relationship, thus perhaps projecting itself towards the future and suggesting a new orientation of your Victorian studies. Thank you. Now, thank you.